Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com. Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood, guys. I have a truly special guest on today's podcast. Football icon and cannabis entrepreneur and also astrologer, we have Ricky Williams. Ricky rose to prominence during his college years at the University of Texas, where he won the Heisman Trophy and went on to become one of the most electrifying running backs in NFL history. You guys got to look up his old footage if you haven't seen it in a while. It's really outstanding. Throughout his professional football career, Ricky was incredibly successful on the field. However, he also made plenty of headlines for his off-the-field usage of cannabis and numerous failed drug tests. In 2012, Ricky made the controversial decision to retire from football. People did not understand it. Rumors swirled that he threw away his career because he was an addict. No one could fathom why he could just walk away from the NFL, and they assumed he was choosing drugs over a career. In the end, Ricky says he was choosing to be his authentic self and happiness, and that no longer included professional football. To me, that was a really interesting question, why I wanted to have him on the show. Like, who's to say when somebody should retire? Is it after they've played many years and they are at the age to retire? Is it after they get hurt? Or is it when you finally realize what your happiness entails and maybe you just happen to be really good at something? Also, you know, I thought it was an interesting conversation to have. You know, was this guy an addict and choosing his drugs over, you know, anything else in his life? Or was he the enlightened one? And we all had a false sense of priorities. So in the end, his decision, it led him down a new path to becoming an entrepreneur in the world of cannabis and healing and astrology. So he's quite a fascinating guy. And, you know, it was obvious that the press created a narrative of who he was. And I love that we get a chance to talk to him and hear who he really is in his own words. So if you think you already know Ricky Williams, this episode is going to be a surprise. And if you aren't familiar with him, I think you're going to be enthralled by his passion and honesty. So please sit back and listen to my conversation with Ricky Williams. If you like it, if you don't like it, please leave comments, subscribe. I always love to hear from our listeners to know how they're, you know, reacting to the guests we have on and to the topics. We have so many different topics every time we have a show. If you're new to our show, we come out every Monday and Thursday evenings. If you ever have a suggestion for a guest, you can email us. You could DM me. There's plenty of ways to get a hold of us. So I want to hear from you, but I'm really excited for you to listen to my next guest, Ricky Williams. Ricky, it is such an honor to have you here today. How are you?
I am great. Thank you.
Good. Where are you?
I am in a town called Grass Valley. And it's funny, when I say that and people know who I am, there's always a chuckle. So I live in a town called Grass Valley. It is halfway between Sacramento and Tahoe in Northern California.
Oh, okay. How did you find that location?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful question. So I'll give you the short version of the story. Right. So I was traveling around the world and some guy gave me a book on something called Ayurveda. I had never heard of Ayurveda, but it was an interesting book and I was fascinated by it. And when I came back to the States, I was in a situation where I was trying to figure out what am I going to do with my life? And I kept thinking about that book. And so I looked online to see if there was any places in the U.S. where I could study Ayurveda. And there was a school in Grass Valley, California. And so it brought me up here. I enrolled in school and started my education. And when I left, I always told myself, one day I'm going to come back to this place. It's a really special place. And about a year ago, I finally made it back.
Amazing. I love that story. So Ricky, the reason why I wanted to have you on, you are like the quintessential type of person that I started this podcast for. You know, as I was mentioning to you before we started, the name is Misunderstood, and it's about people who have been reduced to a single headline and have felt like they are on a mission to change their narrative for themselves or for the masses that have kind of misunderstood who they were. And I think, you know, it's really interesting when I mention your name to all the different people in the last couple of days before I had you on, saying, hey, do you know this name? Do you remember this name? First of all, 100% of people knew your name, good name recognition. But the question that came up, you know, what everyone kind of said was, oh yeah, that's the guy that chose drugs, chose weed, chose pot, chose marijuana over football and over a career. And I think that the greatest question there kind of became, and then all these people would start to chime in and talk. No, that's not what happened. And, you know, everyone had an opinion. And I think the big question is, you know, was it that you were consumed with an addiction and you chose that addiction over something that would give you stability? Or are you the enlightened one and we have a messed up sense of value and worth and following your purpose? And how, you know, how important is it to follow your purpose? So I think that was why I was like, this is the guy for my show.
Oh, wow. You just said a whole lot. It was wonderful. I mean, I just have so many places to go with that. You know, I want to start with this idea of changing the narrative, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if this is what you meant, but what I've noticed with a lot of people is they're trying to change the external narrative, meaning trying to change what other people think about them. Mm-hmm. You know? But to me, the way I look at it, if you're truly being yourself, just the nature of truly being yourself, because we are all so unique, if you're truly being yourself, at least in the very beginning, you're going to be misunderstood. Mm. So if we're trying to change the narrative to make other people understand us, then typically that takes us out of being our authentic selves.
Right.
So for me, the idea of changing the narrative is changing the narrative that maybe the purpose of life is to be misunderstood. You know? Because initially, so it's like you meet someone and you kind of have a sense of who they are. You misunderstand them and then you spend more time with them and you learn to appreciate who they really are over time.
Right.
Right.
And that's that misunderstanding. Yeah, it is. And that misunderstanding can be because of your own experiences or things that are triggered, but it always comes from your experience of them. And that misunderstanding is on you, really, don't you think?
100%. That's the conclusion that I got to, you know, and when all this happened with me and I got this reputation, I realized that people weren't talking about me. They were talking about their own experiences and what I did brought up for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And to me, that's when I started to really embrace fame, because I realized it's an opportunity to bring stuff up for people. And instead of running away from it, I started to run towards it, because it might not be comfortable to bring the stuff up for people. But once the stuff comes up, people have to deal with it. And usually we're better off dealing with the stuff that comes up.
That's so interesting, because I think so many people showed up in that moment of hearing, you know, oh, he's not coming back. He's retiring. He's choosing to go down that path. He continually keeps failing tests on purpose. And that would show up for them as like, why would he ever retire? What doesn't he want? Fame? Doesn't he want money? Doesn't he want security? And that is based on their sense of what importance is in their life. So I want to kind of go back to your childhood a little bit, if you would, and talk about what you wanted and how you realized you were good at football. Like, tell me a little bit about you as a kid. What did you do? What did you like? What did you want to be?
Yeah. So I grew up in a very religious family, a very religious family. And so my early role models were like people in the Bible, you know? Mm. And so kinda, I wanted to be like Jesus, you know, at least in the sense of like being kind and touching people and making people believe and just being a good person. Mm. And as I started to grow up in the world, that, you know, it made sense to me that the way to be able to do that was through being famous, because right, that kind of Jesus is famous, right? We're still talking about him. Yeah. So in my early environment, you know, the greatest resources or access I had to fame was my athletic ability. Mm. And I say fame like being an adult, but even, you know, I remember in first grade, second grade, third grade, all the grades, I was always the fastest kid in that grade. So even from a very young age, my fame came from my athletic ability, you know, and it just stuck, you know, and when I finally got to the NFL and I thought to my mind, I finally made it, I'm going to be able to make a difference, you know, and I started talking to people about the way that I saw the world, and kind of the message was, like, you're weird, shut up and play football. You
know? Right.
That in my naivete, I thought that once I made it, people would listen to me, but it was kind of the opposite. You know,
right.
It was more like people put me in a box. And when people saw me, they didn't see me as a human being. They saw a professional football player. And
right.
That was the opposite of what I was looking for.
And that's really interesting, though, because so when you were a kid, did you want to be a football player, or you just happened to be fast and you just happened to be good at it?
Yeah. So I thought it would be I'd be a baseball player, you know, because that was my first love. But as time evolved, I was better at football. And so it just led in that direction. And it's this idea of I won't even say I love to compete, because I'm not sure that's true. But I love to improve and I love to get better. And having a challenge or a test is a really wonderful way to get better at something. And so what the internal personal fulfillment that I was receiving from being a football player was really the process of getting better.
Yeah.
The side effect, you know, I say that with a smile, was the fame, you know, because when you're really good at something, then, you know, people want to praise you for it.
Yeah.
And what came along with the fame, that's not really what I was looking for, because I felt like it made me less human, not more human.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, at least for me, I felt like I had a more difficult time connecting to people because I was put on a pedestal and not for the things that were truly valuable to me.
My bedroom is my sanctuary. When I moved to Florida, I couldn't wait to get a new bed and beautiful sheets. But did you know that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat? So gross. And besides that, it can lead to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. But I'm happy to share that Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, eco-friendly bedding that prevents 99% of bacteria and requires 3 times less laundry. That's sheets, pillowcases, and comforters. Think about how much time that will save you in the laundry room. I have been loving my Miracle Made bedding. It's super luxurious. It's like a 5-star hotel kind of luxury, but in your own home. It's so soft and comfortable, and it feels very expensive, but it's not. And with their self-cooling sheets, I have the perfect night's sleep all night, every night. It's a game changer. I got mine in the color navy. It's beautiful. I am going to be ordering sheets for all of my guest rooms because I just think the colors are like really exquisite, and it makes your room look so much more, you know, luxurious and expensive, I guess you would say. So go to trymiracle.com/understood to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one. If you order today, you can save 40%. And if you use promo code UNDERSTOOD at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. So upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/understood and use the code UNDERSTOOD to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's miracle.com/understood to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Right. And I found that that's really hard for famous people, athletes in particular, because people put them on a pedestal. They assume something about them when these people have faults and they know their own faults. So it's hard for them to feel like they're living up to that. And it almost makes them want to retreat into themselves more because they don't want to disappoint someone or not be who that person thinks they are. And I think that can cause all sorts of internal conflicts. And it also, you know, when people find out this hero is also takes out the trash and also gets into, you know, arguments and isn't the most present parent or whatever, you know, was going through divorce, whatever it is, it makes that person real. And sometimes that like bursts the bubble of what, how these people think you are. Right.
Well, I think that's the fear, but in my experience, like it kinda, but bursting that bubble is a good thing because it's not real.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd rather someone have a real experience of who I am than a perceived, you know, airbrushed image of who I am, because, you know, you talk about the inner turmoil. That was my inner turmoil. I was stuck and I had to choose between one or the other. I either have to care, go all in into caring what they think, or I have to go all into caring what I think about myself.
Right.
And fortunately I went all into caring what I think about myself.
Right. I just want to talk a little bit more about your childhood for a second, because when you're somebody who has become very enlightened and talks about, you know, really understanding self, and a lot of, you know, when people do work with therapists, with whatever their personal growth is, people are brought back to their childhood to talk about what happened there and if it affected them. So I just think it's important to talk about it for a second. You had a very strong-willed mother, I know. You had a father that...
Can I add one thing to that? So,
sure.
So from my perspective, and you know, my day job is I'm a professional astrologer. So I'm not a therapist, but the work, if you sat in a session, you might think that it was a therapy session. Because when you look at someone's astrological chart, you're looking at their inner life, you know? And when we know someone, and depending how deeply we know them, right, we know more of who they are on the inside, and we can see through the outside. But when you have a chart, it's like if you know how to look at it, you can see right through the inside of who someone is. And the interesting thing about a birth chart, and right, it's where the stars and the planets were aligned at the moment of our birth. And so we're born with it, you know? So I say this because what happens in our childhood, in a sense, happens to our birth chart or happens on top of our birth chart. So there are already inborn tendencies that are there that are experiencing the effect of our childhood. I'll give you an example, okay? My mom is an Aries, okay, and she has a planet Mars, like really strong in her chart. So she's a warrior, you know. She wanted to go to the military, but her mom said she wasn't allowed. Okay, and so you can imagine certain kids, you know, who are more sensitive, okay, raised by a parent like that, right? Probably a nightmare, okay, right? You imagine the opposite, a really tough kid, you know, raised by a really sweet and overly sensitive parent, right? It's probably not going to go well, okay? Mm-hmm. So much of it is really about the match. So it is what happens to us as our childhood, but it's important to remember that it's happening to a set of inborn tendencies.
Okay? Got it.
So yes, I was raised by a really tough mother, you know, and, you know, when I was young and I was mad at her, I'd say she beat my ass, you know. And as I became, like you said, more enlightened, I say, thank God she beat my ass. You know, but it's like somehow the universe knew that I needed to be prepared to take an ass whooping, you know, and it made me a really good running back.
Right.
So you know, the three main influences in my early life, one was what I mentioned already, was very religious family, all right. Mm-hmm. Two, with a really tough mom, you know, who didn't take any shit. But at the same time, the positive side is she really pushed me. She inspired me. You know, the message she sent to me, there's nothing that I can't accomplish if I'm willing to put the work in. Another valuable message she shared with me is if you do the crime, you know, don't cry about doing the time.
Yeah.
Very valuable lesson, especially to anyone who wants to be themselves. You have to be able to tolerate some difficulty, some discomfort. It's worth it. It's worth it, but you have to be able to tolerate it. And I think the third influence was my twin sister. And there's just something about having someone in your life that you know, like, truly knows you and always has your back. You know?
I was going to ask you about her because I don't hear you talk that much about her, and it is pretty amazing that you have a twin. I was going to ask what your relationship is and if that relationship is still strong to this day.
It is. You know, it's interesting. I think this happens with twins in general, but I think it happens probably more when one twin is a male and one is a female, is that because from an astrological perspective, it's a fascinating study because we have the same chart. You know, she was born a minute before I was. So we have the same chart, but if you look at our lives, very, very different. You know, my sister, I'm sure she won't mind me sharing this, but she was a virgin until she got married at age 29. Okay. I think I already had three kids by age 29.
A little bit different.
but you know, very, very different from the outside. But if you understand, like, on the inside, who we are, very similar. So in that way, it's beautiful because on the outside, we're so different. But when we talk to each other, we're saying the same things, just from different perspectives.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com. Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't. Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passion and belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut healthy glass of the One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VitaHustle.com.
So it's always been great to have someone who has a different perspective, but at the same time, the same perspective with me.
Right.
It's been, been very, and also because she's a woman too, it's also more of the feminine side of things. And I think just growing up in a house full of women, I just was always sensitive to like how women feel and how sometimes if we're not aware being a guy that we just do things naturally, I probably don't feel good to them. You know? So it's helped me become aware of little things like that.
I want to just quickly touch on your relationship with your father because you are a father. I want to talk about how that influenced or didn't influence who you became as a man. I know your parents separated, divorced when you were young. They were very young, obviously, and figuring out their own lives. And I know your dad ran into some, you know, issues of his own and issues within your family. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So yeah, my parents, I guess it was kind of normal back then, but my parents married. My dad was 19, my mom was 20. And I think within a couple of months of marriage, my mom was pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
And so.
Wait, can I just ask, did twins run in the family? Like, how did that even happen?
No. I don't know. I mean, we're Gemini. I don't know. We're both Geminis. I don't know. But yeah, so my mom has twins very young. And like I said, you know, my mom should have gone to the military, but her mom convinced her to become a domestic person.
Right.
Oh my God. So I was like, I wish she would have gone to the military. And my dad, you know, he was molested as a kid. So he had his stuff, you know, and he had young kids and he was so young trying to work things out. And so, you know, he probably went too far and, you know, it's interesting for me. I was the one that ratted him out, you know, but for me, I wasn't even like I was telling on him. I just thought it was fascinating because I was a curious kid and, you know, he showed us his penis and kind of how it worked. And so I told my mom and of course my mom freaked out. And, you know, and said he needs to get help. But again, we were a very religious family and in our religion, we didn't get divorced. So my parents worked really hard. Oh, I'm not sure that was a good idea, but they worked really hard to try to make it work. And then another instance, my dad asked me to take pictures of him naked for a Playgirl or something. And I told my mom and she found the pictures, the Polaroids in the trash. And then we came home from school and all my dad's stuff was gone. And so we didn't see him for a long time. Yeah. And there was so much animosity between my parents. And my mom did her stuff too, but there's so many these young people, right? And it took me until I was young and in those situations to realize, oh man, right? You do something adult like get married, but you're still a child. You're not gonna get it right. You know, it's just part of the process. So my parents couldn't get along. So my dad, you know, after the age of 7, for all intents and purposes, really wasn't a part of my life at all. You know, and my mom, she was meant to be a dad anyway, so she was fine. You know, she did a really good job as a father.
Yeah.
And then you asked about how it's influenced me as a parent.
Yeah.
At first, for a while, I thought it didn't because my memory as a kid was my dad wasn't around. So I don't tend to think of dad. I just think of him not being around. And I was so busy doing stuff that it wasn't like I missed him, you know? So I have a 2.5-year-old. I have 6 kids, but I have the youngest one is 2.5. And, you know, I was hanging around and seeing how much of an effect I have on him. And I can tell the effect I have on him now is going to stick with him for his whole life. And my dad was 100% around when I was this age. And so it kind of hit me that, you know, who my dad and who he is probably had more of an impact on who I am than I realize. And because I wasn't around him a lot, I don't really have that mirror to be able to appreciate it. So it's really helped me try to understand my dad more and understand those parts of him that are showing up in me. And one of the, you know, my dad he's a preacher, you know, and he played the organ in the church. And so he's got like a, He's a man of really strong faith and conviction.
Mm.
You know? And you know, the way that I think about the world, and I consider myself very much a spiritual person, but you know, to get here, I've had to take some risks and really put myself out there and have a lot of faith. And I got that from my father.
Mm.
You know, for him it showed up in one way, and for me it showed up in a different way, but easy for me to recognize that I definitely got that from him.
Right. And just to end on that subject, are your parents still alive? Are you still close? I mean, have you worked it out with your dad? Do you talk to him? Are you close with your mother?
Yeah, I'm close to my mom. You know, I didn't have much to work out with my dad, you know, because I feel like he left so young, like we didn't have issues with each other.
Yeah.
But I realized as an adult, you know, as I tried to reconnect with him, I just realized, like, you know, he's just different than we're just different. And I can appreciate certain parts of him, but, you know, I'm good. Like, I love him and I always wish him the best, but we don't talk a lot. And we're not very close.
Right.
The stuff that I had to work out was with my mom. Cause like I said, you know, the first version was she beat my ass. Second version, thank God she beat my ass. Like that required us to have some really difficult conversations. And I'm so proud of my mom for being able to like hang in there. For so many parents, you know, it's easy for them to forget or, you know, not want to think about it. But for my mom to actually, like, for us to have that face-to-face talk where I said, sometimes I thought you were a monster. And for her to be able to sit with that and feel that and not, like, not hang up on me or be defensive, but to really try to appreciate my perspective. And I told her, I said, I'm not saying you were. I'm saying from a little kid's perspective, you know, that's what it seemed like. And so I felt because my mom and I have been able to have these kinds of conversations that we're extremely close. I mean, it's like any relationship, you know, when someone has seen you at your worst and they still love you. Oh, that's the best.
That is the best. And very rare, by the way, to have that unconditional love. Okay. So I want to sort of talk about the point in time where it was like the, what happened, you know, where a lot of people's minds are kind of stuck on you, you know, and what happened, which is, you know, obviously, well, first, you are so good that you win the Heisman Trophy. I just want to stop there for a second. What was that like for you? Was that like the best moment of your life, or were you like, whatever?
You know, it was both. It was both, you know, because the best moment is something that I dreamed of, something that I asked the universe for, that everyone said was impossible. Like, It's not, you know, it's here, right? But there's also kind of the letdown, like, okay, now
what? Right, now what? I was just going to say.
You know, now what? And the now what was there, but I think I wasn't aware to ask until a few years later. So I just kind of let the momentum of winning the Heisman kind of push me forward.
Yeah. But did you like the credibility that it gave you, like that everyone understood your talent and that looked up to you? Or did that not, you know, sometimes that's what people are looking for because it fills whatever hole that they need filled to be told that they're that good, or that didn't matter. It was just like a thing on a chart you needed to check off.
Well, again, it's a little bit of both. I thought they were one and the same, but I realized when you see someone being successful externally, you don't necessarily see the internal qualities that led to them being successful.
Right.
And I think the assumption, especially for African Americans, is that we are born athletically inclined, you know? Mm. And so the compliment is I made the most of my talent, you know? Even the critique when I walked away from the NFL was that I wasted my talent. Mm-hmm. Right, like people know what my true talent are. Well, one of the ways it manifested was through expertise in football. But to me, like I said earlier, I think my greatest talent is my tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's a problem to solve or a linebacker or anything, right, I'm putting everything I am to solving that problem. I can't help it. And that's what made me successful at football. And if you look at, like, for me, I started to do the math and I said, if that's how I define my life, the end result is that my body is beat up. And I'm like, there's, you know, this inner talent that I have, there must be a way to express it in a way, one, that's more than just entertaining people, but two, that's not so destructive to my body.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So how much pain were you in mentally and physically at kind of like the height right before everything kind of fell apart?
So that's a difficult question to ask, because the nature of football players, especially the ones that played the way that I played, our pain tolerance is so far off the charts. It's hard to answer that question. Mm-hmm. So I can say a whole lot of pain, but at the same time, I can say I don't know if I would have had it any other way.
Right. But I guess, like, I'm curious, in your mental state too, were you like showing up for work every day? Were you like, oh, I'm so excited to do this? You were like, I hate being here. I've heard you talk before about how if you were coaching a team right now, college kids or whatever, you'd be like, if anyone wants to get up and leave because they do not want to be here, get up and leave, and I will continue to give you this scholarship, but like own your truth. And I think that's so powerful.
Oh, it's okay. So, you know, great question. So you got right to it. So, you know, the way I've been thinking about this lately is people talk about anxiety a lot, and mm-hmm. I've had a lot of anxiety in my life, or just mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And to me, the way I simplify the whole idea of mental health issues is that there's some kind of conflict between our inner selves and our outer selves. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my outer self had invested so much time and energy into being the best football player that of course I wanted to be there, right? I was living a dream. My inner self was like, get me the hell out of here. Yeah. And for most of my career, I was able to keep that voice down, you know? And then I started smoking, I started consuming cannabis, and I couldn't keep that voice down anymore. Mm-hmm. And that voice got louder and louder, and I couldn't keep it down. So the inner part of me finally got to speak, and it led to me traveling around the world and finding myself.
And okay, so I want to ask you about that. But before that, I just want to say, I feel like there's so many people that probably have been through that moment in time, but what prevents them from listening to these whispers that turn into a loud voice, especially when you're smoking and doing all the psychedelic stuff and bringing it up, they're scared of like the logistics of leaving. They're getting money that they would never get. They don't know what else they're good at. I mean, the fear of letting go of that must overtake most people. I mean, it must be so hard to walk away.
Well, I mean, those are the outer voices, you know,
right.
There's an old like Indian tale.
But that's what we're taught from when we're little. You have to have money. You have to have, you know, some sort of purpose. And people don't necessarily look inward for a purpose. They look outward.
Yeah. Like I said, I think we have two, we have an inner self and an outer self. And mm-hmm. so much of our attention is drawn to the outer self that it becomes, mm-hmm. you know, hypertonic. It becomes too strong, and the inner self becomes hypotonic, it becomes too weak. And that's why we have all these mental health issues. And mm-hmm. so for me, my solution was realizing how out of balance I was. I started to devote more energy into my inner self. Mm-hmm. And again, it was difficult, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
Okay, so when you first start to go on this journey, explain your sabbatical that you took. I think it was in 2004, correct?
It was 2004.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was, first of all, explain what that was like to finally free yourself from having to be somewhere every day and you could just disappear.
Oh, man. You know, it wasn't even because it was the end of the off season. So I was kind of spoiled of being able to do whatever I wanted to do, mm-hmm. you know, and it's common, you know, like Monday mornings. Okay. But this is a big Monday morning. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was approaching, and I was really good friends with Lenny Kravitz's personal assistant, and that spring he was touring in Europe, and so I went over for like 10 days to hang out, and it was so like liberating to be in another country where no one knew who I was and I could just explore and be myself, you know. And then the contrast of going back into the football world where I was put into a box, mm-hmm. and all the physical stuff, you know, it just got to the point where I was like, I can't do it. You know, again, the inner voice was like the way that I was feeling traveling and doing all those things. I felt so much joy. Why? Like, I don't have, right? It kind of hit me. I don't have to go back. Mm-hmm. Because I think I had been telling, there was a voice telling me that I had to go back. And then there was a voice that said, you don't have to go back. You know, and I heard it, and And it got me kind of excited and started fantasizing about, I'm free. You know, I have enough money that I could do whatever I want.
Right.
Why am I going back?
But I think it's so interesting that you're talking about listening to this inner voice, because again, I think it's so hard for people to trust their inner voice when, especially someone like you, it's not only just the people around you that might be like, dude, go back. We want to, you know, live off of you vicariously with all the money you're getting and all the fame. But it's like you have the media creating a narrative about, you know, that you're mentally unstable for making this choice. What did that feel like having all those voices coming from the other side through the television and the news reports that like you were, you know, off doing crazy stuff, or you were choosing drugs over something stable? Did that even affect you, or did you not even turn on the TV?
I definitely didn't turn on the TV. I knew better than that. But I think even if I had, of course it would have affected me. But, you know, I started consuming cannabis maybe about two years before this moment. So I had 2 years of almost nightly, what I called self-psychotherapy, where I was getting more in touch with who I was on the inside. And so there started to be this shift where at first I couldn't hear the inside because the outside voices were too loud, that I created the shift where it was harder to hear the outside voices because the inner voices were so loud. I mean, if that goes too far, you know, people end up in a mental institution, but I do think we have to find that balance, because we do live in two worlds. And so once I had that balance, I'll even say, not that I could see things, you know, cannabis started being basically legal. I couldn't see that, but I could have a sense that other people's opinion of what's going on right now doesn't decide how the story ends. The choices that I make decide how the story ends. And so that gave me an inner kind of confidence to just trust the inner voice and keep going.
Yeah. And I think there is a stigma with, especially back then, more so than now, obviously, but you know, that you were choosing a drug, you were an addict, you had a problem, as opposed to you were leaving and using that stuff to, you know, heal a damaged body and feed, you know, a mind that was searching for something more. And I think that's a really important thing to bring up, because there is still a stigma with cannabis, and you know, people that don't use it really don't know anything about it. So let's talk about that. First of all, do you think that you were ever an addict at all?
Well, this idea of you know, reframing the story, I understand the history of addict and 12-step, but I personally don't have a negative opinion of being an addict. I think a more important question is, what are you addicted to?
Mm-hmm.
No, because the nature of the fact that addiction manifests is, I mean, we all have that urge inside of us. It's just about, are we feeding it in a constructive way? Or are we feeding it in a destructive way? You know, I could comfortably say I'm addicted to reading. You know, I'm a junkie. If I have nothing to read, I start to get like antsy, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but the nature of that addiction is it feeds me back something in return. I think being an addict to something that doesn't return anything to you and it just takes from you, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think most addicts have a problem when they're trying, you know, they're triggered by something, they're trying to avoid something, and they're trying to push feelings down as opposed to use drugs to understand more.
Exactly. And so for me, I can say I was addicted to understanding. And anything that would provide me, like books, right? Anything that would provide me with more understanding, right? I'm going all in for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I'll risk the house for it.
Right. So wait, so that's interesting. So at what point then did you realize like getting into cannabis was a business and not just a soul searching thing for you?
It took me a long while. You know, I had a good friend who was a teammate of mine who was really passionate about cannabis advocacy. And obviously he knew my story. So he reached out and he said, hey, there's a cannabis conference in Arizona. This was in 2015. So there's a cannabis conference in Arizona. Why don't you come tell your story? And at the time, you know, I was kind of just staying low key. And I said, I'm good. You know, and then I hung up the phone and then I started thinking, and I thought first, I was like, there's cannabis conferences. You know, I was like, wow, I was really moving. and then two, I thought, you know what? Like everyone knows, like why am I afraid to tell my story? So I called him back and I said, sure. So it was like mind blowing. It was at a downtown convention center in Phoenix. And I was like, whoa, I was like, this is like a real thing. And there are a bunch of vendors. And so as I walked the floor and I saw that, wow, this really is an industry, then my mind started to like move. Okay. And then I got up on stage and I told my story. And it was the first time that I shared openly, you know, the truth about my cannabis use. Mm-hmm. And it was so cathartic and healing for me to not hide. And what shocked me was after I was done speaking, at least a dozen people came up to me and told me stories about how when I got in trouble, that I was their hero, that, you know, they're getting a hard time from their coach or their teacher or their parent. And I became like their hero of standing up for their right to consume cannabis. And I was like, well, I didn't know that I was people's heroes like that. And so it started to make sense of moving into the industry. It started to make sense to me at that moment. But mainly from the mindset of an entrepreneur is like, there's a need, right? There's still this huge stigma. And I have a real life historical story of someone that stood up for cannabis, and you know, why not use that story to help move the mission forward?
Right. And along your path, what are the other things that you got really into that you got credentials for that you decided to make as part of your lifestyle now?
Yeah. So a big part of 2004, and we kind of touched on it, was that my body was really beat up. Mm-hmm. You know? So a big part of my motivation was, how do I help my body feel better? It's probably why I was drawn to Ayurveda. But I also became drawn to something called craniosacral therapy. And I received a lot of body work, a lot of acupuncture, a lot of different modalities as a football player. Mm-hmm. And I became fascinated with the ones that miraculously worked. And so I started studying those. And so I went to massage therapy school. Got a bunch of credentials in different bodywork modalities, studied energy healing, been studying astrology for about 20 years, became a yoga instructor, meditation instructor. You know, it was interesting. It's like I took like all of the things that I learned from being a football player, and I started to use those to work on my own growth and development.
It's very like Karate Kid, you know, when he did wax on, wax off, and then all of a sudden it comes together later in life. I love that.
Very much so.
So like, what's a day in the life for you now? Like, what are you working on? Where are you headed?
Yeah. So I have two companies right now that I've co-founded. One is a cannabis lifestyle brand. It's really a spiritual lifestyle brand. But, you know, we're getting there, called Heisman, mm-hmm. and H-I-G-H-S-M-A-N. And I have my astrological practice. Probably do 50, I don't like to call them readings, I like to call them conversations, because I feel like I'm more introducing someone to their astrology or to their chart. Mm-hmm. And my passion project, my baby, is my wife and I started an astrology app. Again, it's a spiritual tool, but we use astrology to deliver what I like to call timely food for thought. We call it Leela. Yeah, Leela is a Sanskrit word that means the divine play. So
beautiful. Okay, so let's talk about astrology for a second, because I don't get it. I'm not one of those people. So like, I'm single, I go on all these dates, and half the time people are like, what's your sign? And I'm always like, what does that even mean? You know, but for people that believe in it, it's a thing. So I want to talk about astrology for a second. And if you could give us a little crash course on what's important to know about it, why someone should get a reading or a conversation, what it can mean for us, in pairing ourselves with other people or knowing where we came from, like how do we use it in our lives?
Oh, wow. All right. So quick, easy way, and I'll use things I've already talked about. So I've noticed that most, at least in my life, okay, most difficult times in my life is when the inner self and the outer self were at odds, okay? I didn't know it in the moment, but looking back, that's what it is, okay? And so we get a lot of feedback about our outer selves from everyone around us, but we don't have a way to get a lot of feedback about insights, who we are. So I think of a chart as like a mirror. But it's a magic mirror because it mirrors back our deepest drives and passions, right? What really motivates us and drives us internally. okay? Not externally, but internally. And so I think it's a good mirror or map to help us understand ourselves better so that we're more aligned inside and out. That carries across through what we do for a living, how we get in relationships, because how many people get in jobs that feed them externally but leave them devoid internally? How many people get in relationships that feed that look good on the outside, but internally both people are starving to death? So the way that we're oriented in life is we're always focused on the external self, and we don't even pay attention or recognize the internal self until we end up in rehab or therapy. Mm. And so astrology is a way to proactively engage and express who we are on the inside. So it's an alignment tool. It's so powerful. All right, so the next part, what's important to know specifically about astrology, okay, this is really important, okay, is that the astrology is, and it's an ancient study. It's not a belief system, but like you said, most people view it as a belief system, mm-hmm. okay? So, but it's a study, like the same way biology is a study of biological systems. Astrology is an ancient study of the relationship between what's going on up there and what's going on down here. So the first astrologers were scribes in Mesopotamia, and they would watch the sky, and they would write down where all the planets were, and then they would write down all the things that were going on in the kingdom. So for over 1,000 years, they just took copious notes because they were looking for any kind of patterns that they noticed as above, so below. And this knowledge got passed down and added to, okay? Right, history lesson over. My main point here is astrology is about the study of the planets. And mm-hmm. so when people say, I'm into astrology, what's your sign? Right, that's not real astrology. That's pop astrology.
Got it.
To do real astrology, you have to sit down and with someone's birth time and look at what the planets were doing. Because signs and all that other stuff, these are just tools to measure the influence of the planets. So real astrology is about the planets. It's not so much about the signs.
Got it. Okay. And when somebody's having a conversation with you or a reading, they would be understanding more about what was happening when they were born, things that they're drawn to, that kind of thing?
I'll give you an example, okay? I'll give you a really good example. So the first point is astrology is about the planets, mm-hmm. right? And it's a symbolic system. So what the planets represent are universal drives that we all have. Right? Mm-hmm. A good example in astrology, the moon. Okay? We consider the moon a planet in astrology. But as a symbol, the moon represents our desire to give and receive nurture. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, all of us, in order to be alive today, we've had to make some decent response to the urge to receive and give nurturing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be alive, right? We've had to feel hunger and somehow find a way to get that hunger met, or we wouldn't be alive. So we all have a moon, okay? Another way to think of it is the moon in a chart is like the repository of all of our past experiences around being nurtured and giving nurture. You know, so you think someone grows up, I think they grow up in the woods in Canada somewhere where it gets really cold in the winter, and this baby is born in the winter, and so mom's not always there to feed baby because mom is chopping wood or busy, okay? So part of this child's internal pattern around nurturing is that you got to wait, you got to wait. And you'll see later in life, here's my joke, but it's true. You'll see later in life, when they order Uber Eats, okay? Not all of the time, but more than their friends, right? It gets delayed or the order gets messed up, right? And that this person will tend to lock in some kind of pattern of having to wait in order to be nurtured. And when we understand these patterns, things in our life that maybe we judged as wrong or bad, they don't become wrong or bad anymore. They become okay. It helps people understand their nature. And the more we understand our nature, it's easy to show up and be natural, to be ourselves.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So we're talking a lot about now what you've kind of become, right? And it is interesting to me because, I watched your 30 for 30 special that was done years ago. Did you ever watch it, by the way?
Oh, yeah. It's intense.
Intense.
I did a couple of viewings, so I had to watch it, but yeah, it's intense.
And what first of all, you know, there was, it's very emotional too. I mean, it's really well done for something that was done so long ago. You know what I mean? And what I wanted to ask from that is that you seemed, forgive me if I'm wrong, but the way that it came across was that it seemed like you were lost a little bit back then and were looking for some sort of purpose. And you were, I mean, you had been talking about being lost in the past, or you kind of couldn't show up for things as much as you probably can now. You know, I think your mom was even quoted as saying you weren't present for your kids. And it seemed like you had a couple different women going on at the time, and they stuck by you, but you hadn't really picked one. I think one of the questions was like, are you going to marry this woman? And you were like, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. So it's like, you know, something that I thought of after watching it is that, you know, you were lost back then, but then in doing research about you now, I mean, it almost seems like you've been found. You've found a purpose, or you're on a mission to be found. And how important that is for anyone, and how relatable that is, because especially for athletes, I think that we were talking about it earlier, but they have something they're good at. It's all they know. It's where they get their confidence and their drive from. But when that ends, then what the hell are they going to do? And it really defeats a lot of these people, and their lives turn out terribly because they don't know how to create a second act. And you chose, so, you know, for the most part, when you wanted to end one story and start another one, and you went on a journey to find your second act. So I'm saying a lot here, but it just struck me as how different in different positions you're in from when that documentary was made. And if you feel that you have been found, or you have found some sort of purpose now.
Of course, you know, and I think the only way to be found is to acknowledge that we're lost.
Mm.
You know? It's like most religions have some story of being lost in the wilderness, you know? And because I think to me, this relates to what you were saying earlier about the fear people have of making that jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they hear that voice, but to actually make that jump is because that fear of being lost, you know? And this is where I think growing up, you know, those first 5 years of my life with my dad, I think I always had faith that even if I'm lost, right? That's what all the religion that they put into my head when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it was funny how all those, like, my early religious upbringing showed back up when I walked away, and it showed up powerfully. Mm-hmm. And what came with it is just faith that I am lost. So I was at a moment when I probably was the most lost. And this is just kind of a synchronistic story. And I was in Australia traveling, and there's this guy who lived in the swamp. Okay, he just pitched a tent in the middle of the swamp. His name was Steven. And he was like, you know, if we did like a movie, and I think we're working on one, he was like the mentor figure, you know? And he kind of taught me how to live closer to nature. And one of the things that he, like, his prized possession, when he has this big Bible, you know, and he pulled it out one day, and he was like, I think you should take this and start reading it a little bit. You know, first I was like, I don't want to read this, but the way I respected him. So I was just open to the Gospels, and I started reading, and I came to a verse, and it was something like, if you leave your land and your family and your home, and you go seek for me, everything will be given back to you 100-fold, you know? Mm. And something in, like, just seeing that verse in that moment, I kind of had this feeling come over me, like, I'm good, you know? And that little push just gave me the push I needed to just to keep trusting that inner voice and keep on going.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And I've heard you talk too about the concept of, like, you get to an impasse where there's like a river, and you don't, you know, you can't cross it because you're maybe not ready. And then sometimes you get the strength and the experience and the courage to cross that path, and it brings you to the next spot. Can you talk about that concept a little?
Yeah. You know, I think the idea of this foresight, you know, and I think sometimes we don't, in the olden days, you know, people would talk about foresight and understanding the future, what was coming, but we don't really think that way anymore. And so it's like the ability to see who we have the potential to become. You know, the thing that's popular now, what do they call it? It'll come back to me. But this idea that people feel like imposter syndrome. That's what it is, imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because people see their potential, right? But they don't appreciate that that potential exists in the future, and it requires work and effort moving in that direction in order to get there.
Yeah.
You know? And so the idea is getting to the river and realizing I'm not ready to cross the river doesn't mean panic and think, right? It just means you got to gain some more experience until you feel confident enough to know that you can cross the river. But if you didn't see the river, right, you wouldn't necessarily have it as a goal.
Mm.
And so that idea of appreciating time, you know, I remember being a kid and thinking about 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds as being like old, you know, now that I'm 46. I'm
yeah, like, I was going to say, I remember that like, too. And now I'm 49.
Like, ugh. It doesn't even make it like, I don't feel like sometimes my body does,
but right.
My spirit doesn't feel like that. And so I realized the concept of time, and I'm glad I didn't buy into it. I had this image of myself that when I get old, right, I'm going to be wise, you know? And I think that's what motivated me to go through all these different experiences, because I realized you don't become wise by being afraid to take chances.
Right, right. I know you have a heart out here, so I want to just ask you a couple last minute questions here. Do you follow the NFL anymore? Do you love it still?
I have a complicated relationship. I'm a connoisseur of good football. So if a game is on, I'm like in it, you know? But also what comes up with that is like just memories, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just such an intense environment where there's such like hyper criticism. You know, like after practice or after a game, we go back and watch every step and it's criticized. It's great for, you know, making great athletes and great football, but it's a lot, you know?
Right.
And so I think sometimes, you know, I kind of tap into that and then I have to like take a break, but I love good football.
Did you think this year had good football? I mean, the last I looked, the Super Bowl this year had more viewers than anything in television besides landing on the moon.
I think the NFL is doing a fantastic job. And again, I know what goes into creating the product on the field, and I honor it because the dedication and the attention to detail and the amount of effort and time these guys put into delivering a really solid product, it's commendable.
Did you follow or think anything about the whole Taylor Swift movement into football and how that opened doors for young girls and women to start to like the NFL more?
I think it's great, you know, because there's, I think just time, right? And we're in this time where we're really strongly trying to have greater equality between men and women. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's about, I think for me, at least, it's about men appreciating the feminine mystery, and it's about women appreciating the masculine mystery. And I think if we can learn to appreciate each, we can see how they can benefit us and value and it can bring value to us. And so I think it's great, any kind of crossover that really helps us understand each other better.
Out of your six kids, do you have any Swifties that were wearing Travis Kelce jerseys?
You know, my daughter, she's 17, so she kind of outgrew Taylor. But if this was 4 years ago, she definitely would have been rocking.
She would have been into it. Yeah, it's funny. My 11-year-old knows more about football than anyone, I feel like, now because of it. And half her outfits, you know, have Kelce on the back or 87. So it's cute. I mean, it definitely changes, you know, someone's mindset as to what's important, which I think is very cool. Okay. Couple last questions. Do you have any regrets?
I don't have regrets, but I do say if I could do things over again, which is kind of the same thing, I think I would have taken a year off as soon as I left college. Because I said earlier, and I won the Heisman and I didn't ask what next. And I think a year off would have given me the space to ask what next. So if it was football, I would have been consciously all in instead of just kind of going with the flow.
Right, right. Do you have any desire to get back into football in any capacity? And do you see that in your future at all?
You know, I have a fantasy that comes back every once in a while about being a coach. And it's because to me, a coach, especially in football, a head coach is a philosopher. And he has to get the whole team to buy into what he's preaching. And if he does that, the talent's there. If he does that, it's beautiful what comes out. So I imagine, you know, taking all the different things I've learned and applying it to supporting young men growing up and becoming leaders. Because I think as a as a useful tool, I think the things that football teaches you, if you keep the right mindset, can prepare you to be successful in life.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, at one point, again, during this 30 for 30 movie, Run, Ricky, Run, it was very clear that you felt misunderstood, or people knew you were misunderstood. Do you feel misunderstood now? And do you think, why do you think you were so misunderstood at the time?
Yeah, I think I had, what makes us misunderstood is people can't relate to us. Mm-hmm. And I think, part of it was, being raised by my mom. But I think I just have more courage than most people. And so the things that I was willing to risk and willing to, some people might call it something different, things I was willing to risk and put on the line are things that most people can't fathom. But the same way, most people can't fathom, running into 400-pound men all the time. So, right. But I think that's what makes us unique, is the parts that people can't understand.
Right.
And hopefully, but I think that, there's misunderstanding, and there's also, it can cross over into inspiration. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but there's something there that I'd like some of that,
And that's, go ahead.
And that's what I'm going for. People might not understand me, but they say there's something about him.
Yeah. And it's so funny you say that, because everyone I've mentioned you to, everyone has a story, whether something that they've watched you on, or one guy was telling me how he saw you at an airport and that, he knows every minute of seeing you at the airport. You were sitting down on a curb, you were eating out of a plastic container, and then you got on his flight and it was like the most exciting thing. So it's funny. You obviously touch people and still do, in a way. Last question. What do you want your legacy to be? What do you want people to remember you by and know you for?
That I open their minds.
Mm. I love that. Okay, where can people find out more about your astrology app, and where can they find out more about, hiring you if they want to have a conversation with you?
Yeah, so my personal website is rickywilliams.life, L-I-F-E. And Lila's website is Lilaverse, that's LILAVERSE.app.
Awesome. Ricky, you are amazing. You're such a kind soul. I really, truly wish you the best. And hopefully in the future, you will give me a reading and help me have a little more insight, because I think we can all use a little mind opening and a little help with a direction, So
I'll just say, just the fact that you're doing this podcast is you're nailing it. Thinking about Aquarius, right? And so not going into the sign, but when someone says they're an Aquarius, it means the sun was in the sign of Aquarius. And astrology being the study of the planets, we think of the sun as a planet. So the sun is about what gives us energy, what gives us vitality.
Right.
And Aquarius is the most misunderstood sign, because Aquarius is all about being yourself.
Did I tell you I was Aquarius?
No. I knew. My wife told me.
Oh, amazing. But that is true. So you're amazing. So I love that you said that. And I truly wish you the best. You're an inspiration, and I'm very proud of your journey. And I'm proud to say I know you.
Awesome. Yeah. Let's get together. We'll have a conversation, and I'll introduce you to your chart.
I would love that. Okay. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
Why aren't you eating right? Because eating right is hard? Because it isn't! Kevin Hart fixed it 4 damn years ago with The One. The One is Vita Hustle's game-changing meal-replacing super shake, inspired by Kevin Hart's passionate belief that we all have the right to eat right. Kevin Hart is referring to himself in the third person because he's fired up. Because The One just passed 5 million super shakes sold. 5 million. Just a quick gut-healthy glass of The One gives you all the proteins, all the greens, and all the vitamins and more. One shake, no chaos. Listeners get 20% off their first purchase at VitaHustle.com. Go to VitaHustle.com. That's VITA hustle.com.